The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. At the tiny little town of Rapallo, Hitler achieved a goal that amounted to a secret non-aggression pact with Russia that allowed Hitler to begin the conquest of Western Europe that was the trigger to World War II. And now in Helsinki, we're going to see the Soviet Union finally achieve a goal it has sought for 21 long years. For 21 years, Russian leadership has strived mightily to find some way to get the Western powers to recognize the existing borders of Europe, to recognize, in effect, a divided Europe, and to recognize a divided Germany in particular. And what is about to happen in the talk of détente and the world's highest tightrope walking affair, the ballet in space between Soviet cosmonauts and American astronauts, shaking hands in space in the great space spectacular billed as one of the greatest examples of détente. What is about to happen in the capital of Helsinki between every leader, it seems, in all of Europe, save Albania, between the Soviet Union and the United States is, in effect, granting the Soviet Union what it has striven mightily to achieve for 21 solid years. Isn't it unbelievable that in virtually every issue in this entire picture of détente, the Soviet Union wins and America loses? In trade, they win, we lose. The Soviet Union has to rely heavily on American technology because they have backward, absolutely out-of-date, inept farming techniques which result almost every single year, no matter the announcement of a 3-5 year whatever plan, which results in the need of the Soviet Union to draw heavily on American food. So we help them with not only the billions of dollars which they borrow heavily to finance equipment and all the necessary means to modernize our agricultural industries, but we give them those billions of dollars at exceedingly low interest rates, way below what you as a private citizen and a taxpayer could expect if you want to go buy an automobile or a refrigerator or a freezer to keep some of your own food safe for the next year or so. In trade, then, the Soviet Union wins, and the West reaps very little substantial reward of any kind. In food, the Soviet Union, Russia, is now almost, well, not totally, but certainly heavily dependent upon United States agriculture surpluses because they have chronic shortcomings in their own farm system. And because they have had weather upsets, well, so have we. We need a Joseph right now. The entire world does, actually, if we had any sense about trying to stockpile food to stave off imminent disaster because of the incredible crossover between the food and population curve, which anybody can tell you is one of the really great problems of all the world today, and one that is eventually going to result in the gigantic nuclear confrontation of the future. And yet, under this great blanket, smiling, handshaking, wonderful camaraderie of détente, the Soviet Union wins again and again and again, and the United States loses again and again and again. Now the disclosure of massive Soviet grain purchases, maybe up to 10 million tons of American wheat, will very likely result in costing you, the taxpayer, the consumer, an awful lot more money for all of these various products that come from that particular industry, meaning bread and all that goes with it. Not only that, but some of the oils and some of the pastries and all the other products that have to do with food grains, and food grains include soybeans, and from that comes soybean oil, and so it's an actual whole range of some of the staples of that which is used to produce many kinds of prepared foods in the United States. So you can expect, because of our official government policy of détente with the Soviet Union, that you are going to be paying a great deal more money, more and more inflation coming along because we're passing on to the Soviet Union millions of tons of wheat that we ought to be storing against future emergencies. Now, many, many times I've explained on this program how in the SALT II talks, the United States in what are called strategic arms limitations talks has in effect played directly into the Soviet Union's hands because we have allowed them to catch up. Everybody was laboring under the idea that the Soviet space effort is very much the same as the United States, that they're just about on a par, that they have caught up with us or perhaps even surpassed us. Well, one thing that this nice trip through space should have done is to let everybody see that the Soviet Union is not up to the United States in space, but probably that will be lost on most of the public, and world public opinion will come to the opposite conclusion, that is, that since they were both able to perform the same feat, that they're both equal. American officials who went to the Soviet launching site, finally, after a begrudging permission from the Soviet government to allow them to even inspect the site, and America originally was going to cancel a combined space journey simply because they were not even going to be allowed to see the kind of hardware the Soviets were using. The space site where the launching was to take place was to be denied to American participation. Well, they saw there that the Soviet Union is rather far behind the sophisticated technology of the West. But meanwhile, while all of this ballet in space is going on, when they were taking pictures of whatever, from California to Florida or someplace in India, they may as well have been taking pictures of countries around the world where the ideological struggle of the Soviet Union to dominate the entirety of the world was still going on, where virtual cosmicide is being created by Soviet arms and by Soviet aid here and there, where the Soviet Union seems to be scoring all kinds of victories around the world. The cameras could have shown more than just the peaceful tranquility of a beautiful blue, brown, green world down here below to those cosmonauts and astronauts orbiting far overhead. It could have shown a world with the United States losing continually and the Soviet Union gaining continually. So in defense, as a result of the SALT talks, we allowed the Soviet Union to catch up in MIRVs, while we hope to catch up with the bigger booster rockets. We allowed them to achieve a technological parity. We allowed them to come to the point of a kind of a nuclear standoff where we actually abandoned what was a very important technological superiority by allowing the Soviet Union to develop multiple independently targetable reentry vehicles, the MIRVs. So for the sake of detente, Washington accepts a SALT agreement that concedes parity in strategic weapons to Russia. And already, by the way, the Soviet Union has apparently, in many cases, cheated on the first of those strategic arms limitations agreements, even as the second is in the process of being negotiated. Experts are claiming that Moscow is exploiting ambiguities to embark on a vast missile buildup that they fear could shift the whole strategic balance of Soviet missile superiority against the United States. So even while we're talking about SALT II, the Soviets have apparently, as many officials are charging, violated the terms of the agreement, the first one, SALT I, and are going to gain a strategic superiority against the United States. Now the latest space adventure was born out of detente. And that's an idea that is really, when you stop to think about it, the most costly waste you've ever heard of in all of your life. Unbelievable tons of money it took to perform that. It could have been performed with, you could have put gorillas up there, I suppose, and docked with them. Could have been performed with animals. They took some fish and all that type of thing. It's great, wonderful technology. And in a very few months, people will have totally forgotten it. In a year or two, if we're all still here, barring a nuclear war, people will say, "Do you remember the combined Soviet-American space venture?" And they'll be real dull and hazy and fuzzy in their memories about whether or not it ever took place, and if so, when, and what they did, and who the men were, their names. That'll all fade out of public consciousness. But what will remain are all of the tremendous advantages the Soviets have reaped out of it, one of which is a fantastic propaganda message to the entirety of world public opinion. That is, that the Russians have parity in space. And that is just not true. They are lagging far behind. So for propaganda purposes, in a field where the United States actually has a big lead, it will appear to country after country that the Soviets and the Americans are equals in space, when in fact, they are not. This thing of detente, you begin to wonder, there was a political cartoon that was kind of cute by a man named Hesse, H-E-S-S-E, that appeared in the St. Louis Globe Democrat not long ago. It was kind of cute. It's like an old story I heard many, many years ago of the two guys that were going to buy a cow, and they wondered how to divide it. It was quite an argument that went on. I'm sure you've heard that. And the one decided he would take the front end and the other the back end. And the guy who owned the back end decided to, who owned the front end, wasn't it? Yeah, logically, decided to complain because he said, all I do is keep putting food in my end and you keep getting milk out of your end. Well, the fellow then solved the argument. He had to announce to his partner who was getting all the milk and the cheese and the butter. A little later on, he said, you know, I solved the problem. I killed my half. And your half died. Now, you probably heard that story, if I told it right, but this interesting little political cartoon shows a big, placidly munching cow. The cow is labeled détente. Seated at the end of the cow, bulging over the little three-legged milking stool, is Brezhnev, milking away. Standing right in front of the cow with a bucket full of grain, looking rather bewildered, is Uncle Sam, ready to feed the cow. The cow is labeled détente. I thought that was quite an idea because it certainly does show exactly what is going on. Well, it's taken years. But the Soviets have always said that they are like a bear, that they have infinite patience. They're willing to push a little here and push a little there, and then when they get scared, they withdraw a few feet and then push some more. And so after all of these years and years of ideological laboring, trying to get the other Western nations to concede that those borders decided upon in post-World War II days, when over a period of many years, four separate rebellions have had to be put down under force of Soviet arms to the outrage of much of the Western world, the brutalization of Czechoslovakia, the Hungarian revolt, and all of that with Soviet tanks. Now, finally, the entirety of the Western world is going to sign an agreement at Helsinki in which Russia achieves a major geopolitical global goal of 21 solid years, a guarantee of the inviolability of post-World War II frontiers, which really does a tremendous number of things for them. First, it gives them a completely secure empire. It means that no longer do the Western nations look upon the Eastern European countries, such as Hungary and Poland and Czechoslovakia, as mere satellites, brutalized, kept under subjection by Soviet leaders, but actually recognizes that as a part of a Soviet empire. And the Russians, obviously, would be under the impression that this Helsinki Accord would certainly help them keep Eastern Europe quiet, because no longer could any European or world public opinion express outrage if the Russians simply helped those people along a little bit by force of arms and tanks to reconcile themselves to Soviet domination and to communist dictatorships. So it nicely wraps up Eastern Europe once and for all, or so it would seem, into the Soviet orbit. They win that at Helsinki. Secondly, they then can turn their attentions to their greatest antagonist and the biggest worry of the Soviet Union right now, which is the communist Chinese. During a visit not long ago by Franz Josef Strauss, who was the head of the Christian Socialist Union of Bavaria, a partner in the opposition parties of West Germany's rather difficult politics, Strauss achieved quite a personal feather in his cap because of the tremendous amount of publicity in West German and, for that matter, world newspapers in going to the nation of China practically as if a direct representative of the West German government. But in practical fact, the Soviet Union was very disturbed by all of this because China was urging this very powerful leader in West Germany, a powerful voice for the opposition, nevertheless, to keep this entire thing of a divided Europe in the context of divided Germany and vice versa alive to urge more reinforcement of NATO, more strategic and better deployment of NATO forces confronting Europe's, in this case, Warsaw Pact forces along the line of the division between East and West Europe, East and West Germany. That is very much to the delight of the Chinese. The Chinese wanted Soviet attention in Europe. They wanted the diversion of many, many divisions of Soviet military strength away from those borders shared between the Soviet Union and China over into Europe. The Helsinki Accord is going to do away with all of that. The Helsinki Accord will mean now that very easily could the Soviet Union divert division after division from the now various hostile areas of Europe down into the Chinese area, so they would only have a single front. Communist China is ranked as the number one enemy of the Soviet Union, and so leaders in Russia are very anxious to ensure some kind of stability in the West. That's why it reminds you of a Rapallo Treaty, where Hitler achieved his goal, which amounted to a secret non-aggression pact between Hitler and Germany then, and the Soviet Union. Now, he later violated that, but in the meantime, it allowed him, unimpeded, to turn his back on the Soviet Union and go about the business of gobbling up Europe. This allows the Soviet Union, effectively, to turn its back on West Europe, not worry about the East European satellites, and go about the business of tackling its big worry, Communist China. Also, it gives the Soviet Union a great deal more influence in the West. If the Soviet leadership can promote an atmosphere of detente, of backslapping, and cocktail parties, and smiles, and peace conferences, and arms limitation talks, and various talks about balanced force reduction, and various treaties, and about encouraging cultural exchanges, and educational exchanges, and social exchanges through tourism, and all this type of thing, it's a great goal, a great wonderful opportunity for the Soviet Union to exploit what it's tried to do ever since World War II. They gain a great deal of influence. They can count on further reductions, by the way, in an atmosphere of detente in the Western Defense Forces in NATO. They know that the Western countries are in terrible economic straits. They know that country after country, the United States in particular, and Britain in particular, as well as many others, would like to cut down on the vastly expensive business of maintaining standing armies in Western Europe. And in an atmosphere of detente, they will gain that goal. A weakening, then, of ties between the United States and its NATO allies. And they would hope that a new political climate might open up, as it has in Southeast Asia following the United States debacle there, of a growth in the feeling of neutralism, which is so obvious in country after country. The Philippines, one of the most noteworthy examples of leaning more heavily now toward communist dictatorships in the Asian sphere, with the visit of President Ferdinando Marcos of the Philippines to China not long ago, that becomes quite clear. So the Soviets are achieving unbelievable goals. The United States had hoped to achieve, through detente, certain restraint where important American interests might be at stake. That was the essential thing they hoped. That instead of this truculence, the hostility, the constant shouldering ahead with its goal of worldwide conquest, that the United States might begin to see a little bit of a change of heart by Soviet leadership. Instead, here's what we really have seen happening. Well, it was a massive infusion of Russian arms that actually allowed Hanoi to win a victory, finally, in Vietnam. It wasn't until a massive infusion of additional Soviet hardware into North Vietnam that the communist North Vietnamese managed to achieve a complete, vast, sweeping victory and completely kick the United States out of South Vietnam. In the Middle East, the Soviet Union has growing, fantastic influence, continuing pouring of shipments of highly sophisticated Soviet weapons, especially those SAMs, super sophisticated too, deadly, against Israeli warplanes, which have been sent to Egypt and other countries. The MiG-21s and MiG-23s, 2.5 times, the MiG-23 reputed to be up to 3.5 times the speed of sound, therefore faster than anything in the Israeli arsenal. Shipments of all of those weapons have continued into the Middle East, where the Soviet Union has vast interests. They're being poured into Syria, which encourages Syrian opposition to United States peacemaking efforts. Now, while the astronauts were orbiting comfortably overhead, the Soviet Union continued to pump millions upon millions of dollars into Portugal to aid the Communist Party's drive to gain control there, thus to effectively dismantle the western flank of NATO. If that finally succeeds, and it certainly doesn't look encouraging at the moment, the balance of power in Europe dangerously shifts. In the European Security Conference, the talks between East and West, there are an awful lot of questions about détente expected to surface surrounding this super summit as it's being built in Helsinki. And by the way, our own correspondent for The Plain Truth and the World Tomorrow will be there. And I'll be giving you on-the-spot reports as that does develop as we go along. And this idea of perpetual coexistence with the Soviet Union, and if some of those questions do surface in Helsinki, critical questions about the fallout, the spin-off from this present posture of détente, then you will be hearing it on The World Tomorrow, virtually as it happens, where you will also hear the overview of where we go from here. Now, this unprecedented gathering, and that's what it is, of 33 European nations, including Canada and the United States, has been promoted for years as the idea, the brainchild of Soviet Communist Party boss Leonid Brezhnev. And his purpose behind promoting this kind of a summit is to secure signatures on the dotted line of the heads of state on a document that virtually writes off any further complaints from Western Europe or the United States about Soviet domination of all of Eastern Europe. And the Kremlin seems to be very confident that it will derive all the advantages it has been seeking for so many years out of such an agreement. So that means it's going to have an empire, and the United States is willing to sign it away. Control over its entire Eastern European empire. It will have assurance against any disaster of a two-front war, such as that which would involve an attack by the now nuclear-armed Chinese and the NATO allies in Europe, which the Soviet Union would certainly be a little bit afraid of. They regard the Chinese as quite a threat. They would like to have a secure border in Europe, and we're going to give it to them. You know, it's hard to understand that that can happen when we have known for so many years that is exactly what the Soviet Union wanted, but now we're going to give it to them. You know, you've heard a lot recently about Solzhenitsyn, the very world-renowned author who finally, after being virtually ousted from the Soviet Union, perhaps many times under fear of his life, is now in the West, and how advisors of Mr. Gerald Ford have even said it would not be wise, because we don't want to do anything to upset the Soviet Union, of course, for Mr. Ford to even meet this author and to talk to him. Some speeches recently, a couple of speeches I think are worthy of quoting excerpts from, because this came very, very recently on the subject of détente and on Soviet intentions and the nature of communism, and excerpts from a speech by Solzhenitsyn. I'd like to quote. He said, "Now, of course, the communists have become more clever in my country. They do not say, as Khrushchev said, we're going to bury you anymore. Now they say, détente. Nothing has changed, he warned, in communist ideology. The goals are the same as they were. Some say the Soviet leaders have now given up their inhumane ideology. Not at all, not at all, he said. They haven't given it up one step. There's some sort of struggle for power, but they all want the same thing." Solzhenitsyn warned, "You have to understand the nature of communism, the very ideology of communism. All of Lenin's teachings are that communism considers to be a fool anyone who doesn't take what's given to him, what's lying in front of him. If you can take it, take it. If you can attack, attack. But if there's a wall, then go back." That was a speech given in Washington, D.C. on June 30th, 1975, a speech in New York in mid-July. And he said, quote, "Communism is as crude an attempt to explain society and the individual as if a surgeon were to perform his delicate operations with a meat axe. All that is subtle in human psychology and in the structure of society, which is even more delicate, all of this is reduced to crude economic processes. Communism has never concealed the fact that it rejects all absolute concepts of morality. That's what Solzhenitsyn said. It's true. Communism has never changed on that absolute goal. Someday you ought to read the Ten Commandments, as it were, the ten cardinal points of the entire Soviet master plan for world domination, which talks about promises are as pie crusts made to be broken. Yet we today want to depend upon Russian promises. Solzhenitsyn said, and I quote, it scoffs, that is communism, scoffs at any consideration of good and evil as indisputable categories. Communism has managed to instill in all of us that these concepts are old-fashioned concepts and laughable. But if we are to be deprived of the concepts of good and evil, what will be left? Nothing but the manipulation of one another. We will decline to the status of animals. End of quote from Solzhenitsyn. Now, obviously, he's being called controversial. Many people are now really hailing the Russian author because of what he has said about détente and about the Soviet Union since being in the United States. Others are claiming that he's terribly dangerous, that it's only one man's opinion, that he's an author and he ought to stick to writing and not making speeches about détente. But that, of course, is usually couched in the language of a politician who is speaking from whatever party or political point of view. But while the news now is being filled with world leaders calling for peaceful solutions to world problems, calling for détente, for improved relations, all this talk of peace, peace, the struggle between the superpowers and other nations continues apace. Nations, economic groupings, ideological groupings, racial groupings talk peace, justice, equality, and nations meanwhile sharpen the tools of conflict. They talk peace while they're whetting a sword. They maneuver for advantage through political, economic, or subversive tactics. Even as détente fills the air, the nightmare feared 30 years ago by world leaders is rapidly becoming reality. We're in the midst of the greatest arm race in all of history. The most powerful and deadly weapons ever imagined in the most incredible nightmares of man exist and are being proliferated every single day. So behind all the smiles, the conferences, the treaties, the handshakes, the cocktail parties, the peace conferences, the arms limitations talks, the mutual balance force reduction talks, World War III is being fought right now. And the world doesn't even recognize it. And the United States is not winning. We are not winning in détente. We are giving the Soviets all the big concessions with their flagrant violations and willing to give them more, it seems, every single day. You ought to write for the current number of The Plain Truth and find out what this whole détente picture is all about. Writers from around the world and our offices around the world are talking about détente now. In the coming issue, you're going to see a great deal of real strong language about exactly where that is taking us and what the record really shows. And where do we go from here? What is the overview? The Plain Truth, coming out twice as often with twice the impact, 22 issues a year. And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.